SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. So is David Goodfriend, and Dave just talking with Paul Matisse here. And Dave, this thing just got crazy. The new update on the board, you've got the top four within $9 of each other. Amazing what's transpired here.
$7.60 separating the top four right now. It's out of control. A young man from Kenosha, Wisconsin. I don't know how to pronounce Steve-O's last name. I'm not going to try and
Simonovic.
Thank you very much. A great young man. Obviously been talked about with his involvement with Public Handicapper. And he'd be a great winner. And Randy Gallo sitting third. That just warms my heart. And it would just be awesome that a legendary gambler like Randy would win this tournament.
You know, you talk about that, and these two, Duke and Paul Matisse, you, Randy Gallo, I mean, there's a handful of people over the years.
I don't belong in that group, but thank you.
Don't be silly. Don't be silly. But there's certain people who the community at large has expected at some point would win one of these.
Correct. And Paul was, you know, Paul did it. And it was awesome. It was fun.
You were sitting
actually,
right now,
actually, Steve, you have 30% of the final table list from that 2016 final table here.
That's right.
Duke joining us now, too. The three of you.
And Duke blocked, and a little side story, Duke blocked Maven in the last race. And I thought there might be a fight at the.
He wasn't happy. I know that.
You'll be happy tonight, Duke, to know that one of the things I'm going to talk about this evening is getting rid of the top 50 on points on the stage tonight.
Okay. Getting rid of the top 50?
Getting rid of the top 50 and backdooring in on points.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I know that's something you've talked about and been vocal about as well.
Will Jeff Sotman get a call tonight in your speech?
Absolutely. He'll get
Duke and mine very
He will get 2 minutes, a couple minutes tonight when I talk about the NHC being the best handicapping contest there is, and Jeff Sotman is a very integral part of why this tournament exists. He basically taught the NTRA. He ran the tournament before the NTRA knew how to run it themselves, and he taught the NTRA everything they know about running the NHC.
Yeah, Jeff was, I like Jeff. Jeff was part of my, I got a good story about Jeff. He died shortly after, but the Breeders' Cup tournament, what year did he die? It was in...
I'm terrible at that stuff.
Like 5 years ago?
Yeah, this is awful to say, but I was going to go maybe six or seven.
Six or seven.
Yeah.
The year that I finished fourth in the BCBC, he had 10% of my tournament. And I barely knew the guy. He came up to me one day and he said, I'd love to be part of somebody that I think has a chance to win it. And he came to my house, he met me, gave me the money, and then afterwards I gave him the money, and then he was gone like 2 months later.
He said
he was going to go to a Minnesota Vikings game or something with the money.
You were a brave man. He was not one of the more luckier gamblers that ever existed. And I loved him, I really did. My stories with him are more about music and nightlife.
He didn't sleep much.
No, he didn't. He enjoyed himself, though. And he was a great guy, and really, he did so much for this tournament. Original tournament director. He was involved with the online, getting this tournament online originally. He basically sold the event to the industry. I was down there in Tucson and a year before the NHC started, and he did so much for this game, and he really, I wish the trophy I was getting tonight was named the Sotman. I would love that trophy to be a Sotman trophy.
That'd be awesome.
There's, whether it's Hall of Fame, whether it's some sort of trophy named after him, his name needs to be remembered annually and brought up every year at this event.
Yeah, I agree. Totally.
I love it. I'm so glad you said that. Yeah. All right, so I'm looking around this table right now, and I'm seeing Duke Matisse, Paul Matisse, Dave Goodfriend, and I'm thinking to myself, if you guys had decided to channel your brain power into something other than horse racing, we would have a man on Mars by now.
A lot of wasted energy on these silly animals that run around in circles.
I don't know about that. Yeah. I don't know about the Mars thing. I think I'm already on Mars.
Paul gave out the winner here.
I hope he wagered.
Yeah, the two running second wasn't great. But.
What are you doing here?
You remember, Maven, you remember the first time we met? It was at
New Orleans?
I think it was at Bally's, I think.
Long time ago. Yeah.
I think it was at Bally's when you were doing the interviews.
Oh, that was 2006. That was the 1 year this tournament was on TV. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we had the video.
No, we met Maven way
long before that.
But didn't really know him that well.
Boardwalk.
Yeah, I was a boardwalk guy.
That's right, you were a boardwalk guy.
Sat next to Doc all the time.
Yeah, that's for sure. Right,
what a legend. Now known as Sue's dad.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know how many of the listeners are going to get it, but the ones that did will do what you guys did and chuckle hard.
Doc was a famous character from New York Racetrack, crony of Harvey Pack, right? And part of the Harvey's office and charting doubles and things like that and charting exactas back in the day?
Yep.
That's him.
That's the legend.
And he's Sue Bird's father, the basketball player. For anybody who didn't get it.
I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this race. Dave, did you look at it?
I refuse to look at any races today for fear of picking a bunch of 20-to-1 shot winners and the torture mentally that it would do to me for the rest of my life.
Well, then I'll let you moderate the conversation between these two guys.
And I might learn something here. How do the Matisse brothers do a race? And do you guys talk to each other and try and help each other when you're going through the handicapping process?
Not very often, actually.
We don't do it enough. That's one of the things.
If we're playing a pick six, we would. But
Being on the separate coast and stuff, we haven't. When we get together, we're pretty deadly, but just time constraints now.
Other than Saratoga and big handicapping tournaments, when do you guys hang out at the track together anymore? Is that pretty much it?
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Now, the Matisse clan. Who's in the Matisse clan these days? You know, you guys usually have, you know, you've got your dad. Sometimes your sons come around. Who is that? Like, who's at the table this weekend?
My son's here, so he's around. Rich Averill.
That's Rich Averill?
That's Rich Averill.
Wow.
The world famous Rich Averill. Sharp
in the
stable.
Flesh. Former acclaimed racing stable shareholder, by the way.
Anthony Tamburino.
I know that name.
You know that name?
Uh-huh.
And he is the stepson of Frank Drew, who's in 10th. Frank Drew is in 10th.
Okay.
Stepfather,
He's one of our...
good.
John Nichols.
Of course. Yeah. Clocker extraordinaire from Kentucky and a great tournament player.
I have a different crew now, kind of, because I'm on West Coast. So I got, like, you know, I hang around with James Henry.
Who made the finals?
Who was in the finals, too.
Another HPWS winner.
And I'll say this in front of the two of you. There's never been a tour winner that's won the NHC. There's never been an NHC winner that's won the tour. There's never been a Horse Player World Series winner that's won the NHC or the tour or the BCBC. There's never been a BCBC winner that's won the tour or the NHC. When are we going to finally have somebody win two majors, two big tournaments?
I got to win one first, so.
Me too. I guess I won the tour, but I got to win a big tournament someday.
Yeah, you won the tour now, so.
I'm good at finishing third all the time, so.
No, I think just for a second.
Chief chiming in here. Get the microphone over there.
Since I'm 72 years old, I currently have the most urgency to try to be that double winner. I don't have too many left, so I've got to really work hard the next few years to get that second win.
The tour's more doable now, as you've proven.
I figured something out about this tour this year, and it's a lot more winnable and doable than I ever imagined it was. Now, am I planning on chasing it again? Very unlikely.
But you've lightened my eyes to where I would have never thought I could possibly win the tour.
Because you just assume to win the tour, you got to play a ton online, and the three of us aren't, you know, the two of you aren't play online, but right. I basically don't.
Yeah.
And
I don't either.
It's very difficult to win the tour without participating in
online.
I
think what you did is pretty extraordinary that you could pull it off, but at least it's possible, I think, you know, with using your blueprint.
When I saw him in Los Alamitos, I said, what the hell are you doing? And then he ends up winning. I said, remember?
I saw Paul. I watched the last race, the race that put me over the top. I stood by your brother.
Oh, my gosh.
And I told him in, like, the middle of the stretch that I'm winning the race. I just hope to gosh nobody blocked me. And nobody blocked me. And when nobody blocked me, that's the loudest I've gotten at a racetrack in a long time. I hope it wasn't too OTT for you, Paul.
No, not at all. I was happy for you. We were rooting for you.
And after some of the stuff you guys have seen in the backyard at Saratoga over the years as far as rooting and celebrations, it was probably low-key.
You know, especially with the rotundos and the neck.
Right. Well, I'm sure the guys listening to us want a winner in this ninth race at Oak Lawn, Mr. Matisse and Mr. Matisse.
I'm going with the four.
This is a 12-horse maiden special weight for three-year-olds going a mile and a 16th on a wet racetrack, correct?
Ultimate Mo.
Son of Uncle Mo, I'm guessing? Go out on a limb?
Yep, Uncle Mo.
Yeah, the interesting horse, and he's taking money, is the six. He's got...
Six has got blinkers on, good work.
With the good works, workouts, yeah. With the blinkers, I'm figuring. And the way that last race went, I think the one's got more of a chance. This race is a little different than what you guys weren't here when we were talking with Pete and Steve, where I thought it was, you know, a good race to go long, and there was more options to go long in the last race. I think this one here, I think you should stick probably closer to the
front of the market instead of the back of the market. So, have you guys talked about what's happened with this last race of the tournament? We're down to a 5-horse field for the last race of the contest. And if there's a leaderboard like it is right now, 4 players within $7.60, that's going to be an insane process.
Pete's going to write a book on it. He's already thinking. This is going to be a
maybe
whole book.
Maybe just a chapter.
Yeah, maybe.
He has 3/4 of it written already. And he just has to fill it in with the specifics.
If you don't know, Pete loves for the game theory part of horse racing.
That's the funnest part of tournaments, and it's the part of tournaments that, quite frankly, gentlemen, that most of our competition doesn't get right way more often than not, thankfully. Otherwise, I wouldn't be the tour winner this year.
That's true, but I didn't mention this, but when we were talking with Pete and Steve earlier, I'm getting amazed how educated the contest player is getting. I mean, it's probably because of guys like Steve and Pete, but I'm pretty amazed at how much confidence people have to take the horses in the right races, where it used to be just, you know, every race just pick 20-1, you know, just put the 20-1 shots in a hat and pick them, you know. And if you saw the way the number went up for the final table today, you know, it was really apparent how guys were maneuvering much smarter than they would have years ago.
I'll agree with you and I'll disagree with you.
Yeah.
I'll agree with you that in this type of tournament, $2 win and place bet, mythical, same unit size plays, players are playing significantly better than they did a few years ago.
Yeah.
Live bankroll tournaments, absolutely not so much. There's still so much inequity or...
Well, the one that you won at Monmouth, really so, because I don't think anybody has played those a lot, and they're really interesting, where you have that unlimited, but you have to play the win type of scenario.
Well, yeah, and so many people get caught up in get stuck in the minimums and get dragged down by the minimums and are wasting their time.
Yeah.
Keep going. But just
okay, we've got post time here at Oak Lawn. 10-horse field of maidens going 2 turns. Jim Byers will give the call of our 4th race at the NHC final table. You're listening to the Steve Bick extravaganza.
For you to say.
Exactly.
Just about set. What a treat. David Goodfriend, Duke Matisse, Paul Matisse. Just remarkable and unbelievable. You broke out the Makita, huh? You had to. Everybody was counting on it. Just about set. And after Oak Lawn, the 2 Golden Gates and the Santa Anita off the turf, your favorite in here favorite is quite inflated. 4-1 Sundays at the beach, and then 2 9-2s, the 4 and the 6. Here we go,
and they're off. They came away in a perfect line again. Ultimate Mo is driving toward the lead here. Adari is up close. Kid Sis is well positioned toward the outside. Three deep, racing in third. And then back to the inside comes Blessed again in fourth. And then way to the outside is Paradise Bay. She is fifth around that first turn. And then from between horses comes Sundays at the Beach. She is racing into a joint fifth now, about 7 lengths from the lead, followed by Helena, ground-saving spot to the backstretch. And then comes Cairo Cutie, followed by She's a Truckin', and AP Princess is at the back end of the field as they race up the backstretch. Ultimate Mo. David Cabrera with the lead here by a half length. Adari is her companion to the outside. And then back along the inside comes Helena. She's racing in third with Blessed again from between runners. And up to the outside, Kid Sis is running in fifth. Sundays at the Beach is in between horses there and maybe a brief steady. She is three wide into the turn. And then Paradise Bay up to the outside. Midpoint on the turn here as they come to the short stretch. Ultimate Mo maintains the advantage, tries to let loose here under Cabrera's urging, and Ultimate Mo is drawing clear a bit here. Helena looms up the inside, and then up to the outside, Sundays at the Beach. And now Sundays at the Beach on by Helena, but as they drive here through the final furlong, it's Ultimate Mo with the advantage. And then Sundays at the Beach, Helena to the inside. It is going to be Ultimate Mo taking this one fairly by herself here. Sundays at the Beach finished second, and third was Helena.
Well, you've got the four, and Paul, you zeroed in on Ultimate Mo at 7-2, taken in this spot by both Jim Meeks and...
This is going to be amazing.
Now you're going to, yeah, because the fifth and the sixth, they're now going to tighten it right up.
This is going to be six guys.
Six guys, although Randy Gallo and Scott Coles did get the place money here. They are going to get the place money with Sundays at the Beach
right
at 4-1.
So they're going to jump. This is going to be unbelievable. There's going to be six guys.
Click, 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 click.
Another race, another winner, more giant movement on the leaderboard. This is going to be fun.
This is exactly the way we laid it out.
That's right. It's as it was planned. How fun was that from Dave, by the way? Well, jeez, what a great job.
You can't plan that. You can't plan the Duke swings in, and Paul's sitting here, and Paul Sr., and then the good friend comes by, and the next thing you know.
Duke had that winner. Duke liked him.
Dookie? Yeah. Yep. You were on the...
Yeah, Duke gave the winner there. Not too bad.
Rich Averill, we should say hello to. Come over and take a mic, will you? This is an overdue pleasure as well. Horseman, who we've seen for many, many years, winning races, and it's great to meet you face to face.
Thank you. Nice to meet you as well.
And Rich had a terrible beat to get into. This was a little bit of a different one, but he needed a cap horse to get in at the end of the day and took a 35-1 shot at Santa Anita in the next to last race.
Yes, I think it was three races to go at Santa, yeah. No. I had a seven.
Yeah.
So I finished second.
And he got beat on neck. And
he
was actually coming back again.
That was in the consolation?
Yesterday. To get into the final 67, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I saw earlier in the week.
Pay any price
with the nice.
Yeah, no, it was. I run four this weekend, so three winners. And
did you really?
Yeah, I had winner at Tampa today.
Tampa, right?
Yeah.
I saw somebody in Tampa.
Yeah. Paul named that horse.
He never loses.
Yeah, Double R never loses.
Richard. Absolutely.
Double R never loses, right?
I love it. I love
the R Show Girl one today. Was speaking of Vegas, R Show Girl.
No claim.
Well, and let everybody know, I mean, the pay-any-price story, Duke and I discussed it. Actually, Paul and I discussed it at the time at Breeders' Cup week going. I was driving to Louisville, and we had that conversation about what was going to happen, that it was just an awkward position because and Rick Hammerly gave me some insights about just not leaving town and not, not getting out there and kind of mixing it up with some of the players in the other turf sprint markets. I know it was a source of great frustration.
Yeah, it was. I mean, but you know, he's not the easiest horse, you know, to train and chip. And I mean, you saw at Tampa, you know, he didn't get along with the pony, and you know, he flew in, and it just wasn't good. You know,
he's a tricky horse. Yeah. That's why he was in for claimers early on. He's a very complicated horse, and you know, Rich's crew has done an incredible job to get him to where he's gotten him, and but we're limited in what we can do with him. However, we're pushing for a 5-furlong stake race at Santa Anita. If anybody's listening, we're coming. You run that big 5-furlong race at Santa Anita. We're coming.
Can you foresee keeping him to get to Keeneland in 2 years when they're back to five?
I mean, what kind of story would that be? 10-year-old? I mean, it would be nice, but I don't. I mean, it wouldn't be my favorite turf course, Keeneland. That's probably not
that sand based.
Yeah, little thick, and then going an extra half a furlong. So I don't know. I mean, I would almost rather go 6.5 at Santa Anita than 5.5 at Keeneland.
Well, what's the backstory on him in terms of acquisition?
It was Rich's claim. We were at Saratoga, and I was doing the pick five at Saratoga, and he comes up, and I'm thinking that Rich is bothering me. What the hell does he want? He goes, I'm going to claim this horse today at
It was the next day.
Yeah,
it was Duke's birthday.
Yeah, he's a clear.
So Duke head. Duke had a couple cocktails that day. So I really couldn't get. I really couldn't get to him. So I usually me and Duke are the ones to discuss any purchases that we have. Very rarely. And Paul's like, yeah, for sure. He's like, you know,
he had run a big figure.
Yeah, he's like, you know, this horse could run even higher than that if we, we got him. So we claimed him that day. He won.
He was difficult to begin with.
Yeah, no, but I mean that day
he won the day we claimed.
No, so yeah. Then we told Duke. I said, we're claiming horse. It was at his party that night. I said Duke, all right. Yeah, he just bowled a 300. He didn't care. So the next day he ran. We claimed him. We were the only ones in, and. You know, he was very difficult at first to train, and he's still difficult to train. So, but they've done a great job, and I'm glad to be able to, you know, enjoy it with, you know, my, you know, partners and also friends, because I have all my horses are partnerships mostly. I own very few just by myself. And if I own 25% or 50% or, you know, 100%, I don't ever say, oh shit, I only own 25% of that one, you know. So, I mean, and, you know, we've been able to go on, you know, nice places, you know, Preakness, we went, and, hopefully.
It's one of those great things. It's a great thing about horse racing. You know, friends get together, you take parts of horses, and sometimes it works out, and when it does, it's just a
I mean, Friday was the first time we've ever watched together.
Oh, wow.
And won.
Wow.
And won. We were at Preakness together and ran second.
Yeah. That was,
Richard's boy. Yeah.
Richard's boy beat us. And the rain. It rained right
yes.
before that.
Yes. Yeah. That was a miserable day. It's always going to rain one of the 2 days. Yeah. Let's get a quick update here
with the
leaderboard. And it's unbelievable. Randy Gallo, 326. Simonovic, 324. Scott Coles, 321.60. Joe Perry, 321.20. Then it skips down $6 to Jim Meeks, 315.80. Matt Voglio, 313.20. And then a gap. Then there's $15.
Yeah, but believe it or not, nobody's a cap horse out of it.
Yes, yes.
Where in the last couple of years, the cap horse was second. We were talking about getting a cap horse for second. I mean, this is incredible with how close everybody is.
Chris Littlemore has been shut out so far through the four, 295.80. Then Marshall Graham, who is whiffed as well, 276.90. And Frank Drew, also as yet to pick one that has added to his total of 268.80. It's remarkable.
And now we go to the poly trap.
And now we go to two at Golden Gate.
For some real handicapping.
How do you approach, typically, how do you guys approach the, do you like the, do you play it at all?
Yeah. Very little.
I would be in trouble.
Woodbine Wednesday nights, where, and we We go to Saratoga Hearts on Wednesday nights and have a party, basically, and that's my that's all I got left of handicap and polytrack.
Is Jonathan Wong in the race?
But I did look at this race.
Jonathan Wong, right?
I did look at this race today.
I will. I absolutely will. But, you know, Presque Isle and all you – Presque Isle's
– I had a few horses there with Bennett a couple years ago, but I try to stay away from that. I don't know too much about that stuff.
Yeah, Presque Isle is a little bit different. It's similar to Golden Gate, actually, because it's both the Tapita and it's faster.
Yeah.
Where Woodbine's a little slower. But, how wet is it today? I think that was the interesting thing that could happen at
Golden Gate.
You know, nobody's done any. I've done a little tracking on that, trying to keep track of the wet track, poly tracks, because they just label up fast every time, which I don't believe.
No,
I think if you were really wanted to do the, I think these surfaces change more than what they lead onto, and I've seen enough of instances where different horses run differently based on how fast it is and when there's different moisture in it. So if I was doing it serious, that's what I would try to go track it. But I got enough things going on that I don't need to go.
Let me ask you a question, though. when we had Keeneland Delmar and Santa Anita, what did you do?
I boycotted the NHC one year. Like, if you look at my list, the reason why I didn't is I wouldn't do a tournament with polytrack.
With all the polytrack.
Yeah.
Keeneland used to change a lot. Cold, hot.
You talk about for tournaments, that's where it comes into where more prices. When they used to run those polytrack races, it made contests almost impossible because every race was, you know, horses that you couldn't really figure with long prices. You know, they hit the top of the stretch. It's a bouncy bounce. The horses are bouncing all over the place, and six horses are across the track. You know, and I just didn't think that was a real indicative of contest wagering. You know,
since you took a year off.
Well, I just didn't feel like it was worth it to even try to make it here, because it was just a crapshoot when it was all the, you know, when it was all, it was also I didn't like the format back then. Right now, if they had the current format and the polytrack, I would have done it. You know, because. Like, I agree with what Maven said earlier. This is the greatest tournament in horse racing contest.
And Chick, even the Horse Player World Series winner, doesn't stick up for his own contest. It gives it right to the NHC. What is it about this format that you think is so great?
Well, first of all, the environment's incredible. Yeah. You know, I mean, if you get Steve Bick out to a contest, you know
it's big time.
Yeah, you know it's big time.
Big time.
Because he doesn't come for anything, you know.
Especially how bad the food is here.
Would you boycott the food too, Steve?
This is fantastic. Yeah.
But, and just... And the format's just great. I mean, Pete and I, you and I have talked about it before. The good contests have cuts. You know, I mean, yesterday is a perfect example. In the old format, we would have been going for the top. You would have seen how bad the tournament was.
Right.
You know, it would have been deciphered on that Burrell horse, you know, that didn't mean anything. And the turf race at Santa Anita with a total potluck 15. Instead, it's just to make it to the cut. And the guys who had done all the handicapping that were ahead of all those guys didn't lose out.
Still maintain an edge, get credit.
And they have a chance today to come out. And then the contest switches completely today, where you have to get points early on and get winners. So it's a different kind of handicapping. And it's quick and fast with shorter fields. You know, today at the beginning of the day, and then you get into an environment here where it turns into game theory and final table and trying to pick with other horses that and try to pick what your opponents are not going to pick. So it's a total variation of all the formats together.
You mentioned about the cut lines and the positive effect they have. Do you think a cut line could work in a live bank format? Do you think you could get people to turn over enough money that you wouldn't lose out on churn in a live bank roll?
Somebody mentioned that the other day with the Pegasus when we were going over the flaws of the Pegasus tournament.
Yeah, we've talked about that a bunch this weekend, the idea that you can have a long-time leader hit for 20 grand and get passed by four people. If that doesn't reveal a flaw,
right.
I don't know what does.
Yeah, that's an ultimate. This year was definitely I mean, it was Patrick, right?
Patrick and 40.
That was, that was terrible for him.
Yeah, that's not fun.
No. I mean, you could make the case he could run second, you know, but just the fact that he finished fourth and how how many dollars he got beat by, just really, like you said, just it exposes the tournament.
What is your – we talked about it a little bit. Steve was quoting you when this topic came up yesterday, but now that we have you here to talk about it, what do you think the best vision is – to correct that, to keep the churn alive, but to make it a little bit more of a fair contest, the same way that the NHC has evolved over the years, perhaps live bank contests need to evolve too.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. You know, I'm hoping that these money tournaments, as they get bigger, the committees I've been on and the people I've talked to, this is one thing that I've done consciously since I've been asked to do those things, is that I don't want to do something that the players don't want to do.
Right.
You know, I don't want anybody to think that I'm trying to manipulate the contest in any way, even if it's better. I want it to be so that the players get what they want. And I haven't heard enough positive that they want change yet.
That's interesting.
But I keep...
This could be a sea change, though.
Right.
When the more this story gets publicized, I think people are going to be like, wait a second, that's not right.
Right. And I'm hoping that they you know, the players kind of see it on their own. And see that we need to change it a little bit as a way. So I'm a little bit hesitant to say, well, we have to do this or we have to do that. I like the idea that you can't bet the last race; you can only match the amount that you've bet earlier in the contest.
Yeah,
with no limits on that.
Yeah.
Let you go all in anywhere up until the last race. I think that's interesting because that makes you bet earlier and. It'll make you the churn more. I think the people will bet more, and there'll be more strategy involved, like
so
we were talking about.
You'd make up. In other words, even though you wouldn't have everybody firing all in the last race, I would worry that people would be too conservative and stick to minimums, but you think enough people would go all in early for the ability to go all in late that the overall churn number would stay similar?
Yeah, if you wanted to bet 5,000 in the last race, and you couldn't just stick with your minimums. At some point in the earlier, you'd have to say, I got to play 5,000. I got to make a move here somewhere. Even if it's a conservative 5,000, which really wouldn't affect the tracks because they're still getting the handle.
Right.
You know? And I think it would be, you know, and also, if you wanted to go all in earlier, like I use the example, I bet Fellowship at 70-1 on the Pegasus World Cup that day, and I bet like 5,000 on him in the contest. And, you know, at the time turn it for home, I said, what a great bet I made.
Yep.
And when I thought about it afterwards, it was a terrible bet because I'm risking 5,000 on a 70-1 shot, even if I thought he was a 30-1 shot in making a good bet. My chances of blowing out the tournament right then versus my chances of winning weren't there. Right. I mean, even if I won, I wasn't going to win. I still was going to have to hit an all-in bet at the end of some sort. And that doesn't make sense. You're talking about a flaw.
Yep.
You know. But if in the other case... You could make a bet like that and actually have it make it impactful, you know, early on, you know. Or even how J.K. goes about those tournaments where he makes early bets, you know, even if they're more chalk-driven, that leads you to go later on, you know. And there's risk involved, too. You know, it's not like, all right, I'm just going to pedal along for 10 races and not do anything, you know. When you know it's an all-in type contest, why would you have that for the first part of it? You know, it just doesn't make any sense, you know? Like, you're going, it's like walking for, it's like a marathon. We're going to walk the first 25 miles and then run the sprint, and we're going to run the last mile.
Whatever the idea is, it needs to incorporate the idea that you need to earn the right to make that play at the end.
Right.
So whether that's just having a lot more bets that you have to make, or a technique like what you're describing.
Yeah.
Paul also likes the idea of being forced to make more bets. Yeah. To make it a contest.
Yes.
Not make it a one-bet or a two-bet contest. Having more bets that are mandatory. Not necessarily mandatory races. Mandatory that you have to bet this many
you
times.
You have to turn your money
over. I think would help
over.
Those yeah, would help the money tournaments also.
Yeah,
Paul is...
Let's move along to talk about our upcoming mandatory race here. What do we got coming up, Paul?
Well, you know, the Golden Gate race, this is the shorter field, which unfortunately with three races to go, you would like to really have one that separates here. But it'll be interesting to see the strategy of if somebody at the top will actually shoot for the moon and try to really risk it here.
Classic, you know, case of play who you like if you're at the top here, I would think. I think you just take whatever horse you think is going to win, right? I mean, in terms of game theory at the top, you and moving along any other amount, especially
you could win in here though. Race. You can win this contest right here if you. I
if
mean,
you
I would
like
go,
a longer one. Absolutely,
right. I would not be afraid to go. You know, if you had an opinion, I know the one in this race is an interesting horse, and he's 10-1 right now. He had a trip in that race at Golden Gate. I went back and watched that race, and he had trouble. So.
You hear Keith Chamberlain in the background announcing that we are 1 minute to this race at Golden Gate. You've already professed your lack of love handicapping these races, but is that what you do no matter where you are in the table here? Go with the number one?
No, I don't know, because the three, he had a horrible trip, probably a worse trip the three had last time. So it's a little complicated because you go one short, one long. Those are the two horses that I was interested in, the one and three. But, you know, it's a wide open race, and I could see anybody going anywhere for sure.
Let's run them down. Papa Clem's Midnight, the one. Cliff DeLima with Julian Couton, 9-1. Closed the show low, 9-2. Was a 2-1 morning line. This is Frank Lucarelli with a Frank Alvarado riding 9-2. Kelly, Don Markle with Juan Hernandez, 2-1. That's your three. Flashy Hero, Cliff DeLima, second of hit, two in here. The longest shot on the board, 19-1 with Ricardo Gonzalez. Amber Louise, Jerry Hollendorfer with Abel Cedillo, 3-1. Crown Kitten, Bill McLean, and William Anton Georgie, 7-1. And a horse that kind of caught my eye a little bit, Deb's Wild Card, Sam Calvario sends out this one. Actually, he's now just got bet down a little, 7-2.
He's taking the money.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely in the market. He's definitely the one that's taking the play, I think.
How much, you know, Paul, there's a great question, you know, for players that are learning that aspect, board watching. What's the most important thing? And, of course, we're in an era, you and I have discussed it, with, you know, the computer-assisted wagering and a lot of late movement. But when people are watching a board, what should a neophyte player, what can they glean when they're watching a horse that was, whatever, the 6-1 morning line and 7-2, 3-1?
What am I missing? That's the first thing that I would say. I wouldn't be so cavalier to say, oh, this horse has no chance, you know, or they're making a big mistake here. You know, like I've said this before, horse players are smart. And if you notice that something's a little out of whack, you know, don't be so sure to jump to say, well, they're making a big mistake here. Why is this horse being bet? And then you can make the conclusion that he's being bet for the wrong reasons, then you can get off of him. But in most cases, at least for me, is I'll say, why is this horse being bet? And then I'll go back and look at it again, and I'll try to find the reason why. And a lot of times, after I do find the reason, I find it compelling, you know, like to go forward. I have it the other way, too. I go, well, this horse is being bet because of this way, and I still don't like him. But I think you should go through that process, not just blow it off the idea that somebody's drunk at a bar and made some huge win bet. That's not the reason, you know. So,
how about you, Michael? What kind of, Mike Bacek, what kind of board watching do you do? Does it affect your play at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're looking at races where you don't have all the information, first-time starters, you know, sometimes that information is important. You think a horse may not normally, all the Pletchers, all the Browns, all the Baffers take early money. But when you see like a Dan Hendricks horse maybe in California or Ian Wilkes horse in Gulfstream take a little more money than you think, then you may want to kind of go back and look around. But as a neophyte, as you said, you know, look, as a neophyte, just bet what you're going to bet. But in this situation, like if I'm playing here today and we're still in California and a Dan Hendricks horse or a Steve Miotti is taking a little extra money on a first-time starter, information that you don't have, I would go back and look, as Paul said, and say, what did I not see about that horse? But look, we're talking about an unprecedented final table here. where it's never been as close as this, and you just got to go with what you think, what has got you here today, and pick a winner.
And it's tough in contests because when your horse takes money on you and you need a price to go up, you know, for a contest player, it's a real conundrum when the horse takes money on you, you know, because, all right, I need a 9-2, but now this 7 is taking money and he's 3-1, where I thought he was going to be 9-2. How do you handle that? I mean, do you bail on a horse that you like because he's not the price that he was, or do you take it as...
Well, you're not, you know, right now you're not kind of in a situation where you're trying to, like, you're price shopping for the win, like I was. But now you're probably just needing to pick the winner, and if you drop from 9-2 to 7-2, it's
okay.
You
probably take it here.
But in the last race, and you know you need 15 bucks, and your horse goes from 5-1...
But like yesterday, you know...
Yeah. Oh, yesterday, for sure, when you're trying to make the cut.
Yeah, what would you do, you know?
You've got to be price shopping.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to.
Yeah. I think we're going here, Steve.
We are going, and I just gave a look at the double will pays, and as it happens, Paul, 3-7-2-5 is the order of the will pays.
Right, so
3-7-2-5. Just about set for Matt Dinnerman's call.
I mean, this is exciting.
Yeah.
I just got to tell you, I mean, this is just like unbelievable. Paul and I are looking at each other like,
Debs
this Walter is crazy.
Debs on the outside, hard sent to be forwardly placed. Amber Louise away in the second position. Debs Waldcart. The classy mare gets over to the rail and shows the way by a length and a half. Papa Clem's Midnight moving forward takes second. And this Amber Louise with Close the Show low. Kelly on a really, really strong hold there. And she had to tap on the brakes, went in tight off of heels. Passed by Crown Kitten in the orange colors. Flashy Hero is the trailer today. She's 9 lengths off the lead as they approach the far turn. Deb's Wild Card, a clear advantage for her on the front end, goes into the turn with about a 2-length advantage. Papa Clem's Midnight is second with Amber Louise as they charge around the turn. Close the Show low next in a little bit of a tough spot there between rivals as Crown Kitten just passes her. Kelly, she's had a really rough trip, had to tap on the brakes again at the 5/16 pulls towards the back of the pack with Flashy Hero. They're off the turn. Deb's Waldcard trying to give him the slip. Deb's Waldcard hugs the rail, swings into the stretch, opens up 3 lengths. Papa Clem's Midnight second. Kelly running on down the center of the track, but Deb's Waldcard approaching the 16th pole has a 5-length advantage and she is long gone. Deb's Waldcard, a classy mare, went right to the front, never stopped. Under a hand ride late, scores by 3.5. Kelly, decent enough effort in second. Papa Clem's Midnight third. Close the Show low fourth. Flashy Hero fifth.
Place has the three, and so, I mean...
So does Joe Perry.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to just, like, kind of extend themselves. And
really, a bad break because all the bottom four guys had the one. So, you know, down the stretch, it was the 1, 3, or 7, and the guys that were in the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th actually had a chance to make a big jump.
I'm sure you've talked about this, Steve, but Randy Gallo has been in the contest business for longer than, I mean, I went to a contest and was it in Sioux Falls or something? Or where?
Yeah.
I mean, South Dakota, when was that? Like, it must have been like 20-something years ago. I went up there and my wife looked at me like, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Idaho or South Dakota for a contest. I don't know what I've gotten into, honey, but, I mean, I love you. And it was a great contest. He's been running contests in a little OTB in a strip mall, I remember. It was a great contest, and so it would be very fitting if Randy Gallo would close it out here. It would be really something special for somebody who's put a lot of time and money into our business.
Absolutely. They were just talking about the OTB earlier today. I guess he just got out of it fairly recently. He sold it? Or
last year, yeah.
Well, when I went up there, Steve, it was literally in a strip mall. It was the OTB, and that's where the contest was running, and it was a fantastic, you know, event. He was a horse player, and he knows how to put it on, and that I can't. Had to be 25 years ago.
You know what's funny, and there's your, I don't know if it's a book for you, Pete, but it certainly would be a great article. Those origins, Penn National, right?
Yep.
Penn National, Nebraska, right? Didn't Horseman, that Horseman's Park or
Axar Bend, you think they had a company? No.
The other place, I think it was called Horseman something
or
other. But they used to bring Steve Crist out.
Yeah.
They loved it. Andy's been out there.
Well, and the Las Vegas ones with Mr. Wolfson with at Caesars, and Mirage took the lead, and the MGM had one
Oh, Penn National. The Penn National was...
No, that's the original one. That,
right? But,
and
yeah.
The fellow's name, the marketing guy who came up with this, Harvey always credits, who Harvey says he stole the idea for New York.
Sturgis? I don't know his name, but you got it right. Yeah. And then there was one in Connecticut, too, I think. They kind of piggybacked on the...
Harvey definitely gets credit, though. Those New York contests were a very big deal. And Harvey had the vision of doing the million-dollar contest back in the day that the New York politicians wouldn't let him do because they said it was a game of chance,
right,
and not a game of skill. So that prevented them from taking a quantum leap forward in the contest game back then. But Harvey, at the invitation of Steve Wolfson Sr., did come out here and hosting as far back as 91. I think it was the Thoroughbred Challenge at the Mirage. Or does that sound right, Michael?
Yeah, I think it might have been the MGM.
Okay.
Because I remember my father brought me out here around that time. And
MGM
and
might be. This is
it was a big
contest.
It was one of the first things I've ever. I think it was at Bally's. I think you're exactly right. That's right. That's right. It was at Bally's. That was one of the. But I'm trying to dig into this, but Gallo was one of the first original pioneers of contests. This thing had to be more than 25 years ago. Because I don't know, it had to be in the 80s. It had to be in the late 80s that Gallo was running these contests.
That one I don't know about.
National was the original World Series, I think, of handicapping contests. And I can't think of the guy's name that originated it, but he was on my list for a book that I'm going to write.
Excellent.
To interview. But he was the originator of the contest.
I think he's still around.
Yeah. At the Hilton here in Vegas had to pick the ponies a long time ago as well, which I think was piggybacked on Mr. Wolfson's idea as well. They used to run two a year. And then, you know, don't forget the Orleans. We've been doing the Orleans contest a long time, since the mid-90s. Whose
idea was it to go? Chick, I assume it was you, I'm just thinking because of the first one.
Well, Duke and I were living on the top floor of the Gold Coast. We had a deal with the Gold Coast, and they got us into the Orleans.
Early days of rebates. This is how it happened, and it ties into the Randy Gallo story too.
Yeah.
He was one of the players, and there were many of them who said, "Wait a second, I can have my OTB and
play
exactly and play as well."
Yeah.
Thus, enforcing the advantage. You saw Dana Parham get into that business and Randy.
All happened in the late 90s.
Yeah.
Mid to late 90s.
All right.
So we have two races left. And, I mean, this thing has gotten about as tight as you can. Randy Gallo is... Randy Gallo is 337, which is 10 points over Steve Siminovic and another 13 points over Joe Perry. And only 16 points over Scott Coles. So we have like four players within a winner, a 7-2 or 4-1 winner. So four players are like in the hunt. We've never had this in the final table of the NAC that I can remember.
Not even close.
Yeah, not even close.
So this is very exciting. I don't even know how to strategize for something like
even
7th place is within $40.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about a winner. So nobody's is without the realm of possibility for actually picking a long
except,
shot winner.
Except
and win.
With the off the turf race, you got to do it now.
Yes.
So that's a great point because we basically have two races left, but we have one race that's almost going to be unplayable for contestants here.
And let everybody know the four Animosity, who I was going to play if it stayed on the grass. Animosity is scratched now, so we're down to four horses in the nightcap at Santa Anita.
So, Paul, here we are, and you're at the final table, and we know you got two races left, but the last race is unplayable if you're behind. If you're Randy Gallo, you are ecstatic that they have scratched down to four because you know that you've reduced the chances of somebody picking a long shot that can beat you. So what are you thinking?
Well, the only thing I would think
if you're in the lead right now.
No, I think this is more like you're in the last race. You know, more so than you got to start picking what somebody else is going to go. I mean, I'd be analyzing.
You're thinking about defense if you're.
So you're thinking now about blocking.
Yeah, right, right here I'm thinking about blocking.
But, Paul, I mean, it's hard to block when you're only 10 points ahead.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is tough.
So hopefully there's a horse in here. And look, and it's saying there is a horse that's 3-5. So you basically have that horse. You don't have to play that
the
horse.
The protection of the chalk.
Is that right?
Concept.
I mean, we're in. No, we're Golden Gate. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My bad.
Yeah.
So we're in Golden Gate. Wow, I mean it's not a good board if you're in the lead because there's a couple of co-favorites at 5-2 and another couple of horses at 4 and 5-1. It's kind of like the worst board that you could imagine if you're in the lead by 10 points.
Walk us through your thought process, Paul, if you were sitting in Randy Gallo's shoes.
One of the
right
biggest
now.
Problems is I haven't looked at this race enough to give you a real handicapping analysis of this race. You know,
if you want to dive in for a minute, or Chick, have you looked at it?
I think I kind of agree with Michael. The favorite's going to be the 7, right? He's going to be the clear-cut favorite.
Sounds that way.
Yeah, he's going to be. Well, the 7 and 10, right? 7 and 10 are going to be the two favorites based on the doubles. They're going to be co-favorites.
If you're Randy, do you think, okay, they're going to assume I'm going to play that one, so maybe I have the protection anyway?
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I'm thinking if I don't like the 7 and 10, I might try to fake them out here. I'd be looking more at this at the 6 or the 9 just based on without handicapping it.
Right.
You know,
just looking at the numbers.
Cuz I think they're going to assume he's going to take one of those two horses.
Michael, have you looked at this race? Just numerically, how do you...
I mean, I don't even know that you... At this point, you're not really... To me, Paul, you may disagree, but I'm not even looking at this from a handicapping standpoint. I'm looking at this from a...
probability?
A game strategy standpoint.
Yeah, it's a hard board for that, though, because you can't cover both.
It's a terrible board for that particular... You want a 4-5 chalk...
Yeah, that you already have.
Else.
Yeah,
right.
And then you can block with one of the other two.
Right.
And then you've got... Your odds on to have success just based on the implied probability of
right.
the odds.
But here it looks like they may be three horses as Paul, you know, the 10's going to get a little bit more play. So there may be three horses at around the 5-2, 2-1, 3-1 level. That's the worst possible situation if you're in the lead right here.
This is the kind of scenario that I like because it's top heavy for the prize fund because you would think. If it wasn't, you'd have a lot of guys just taking,
moving up incrementally,
yeah, or to just
get
or just playing safe,
or something.
Yeah, playing safe, and not necessarily going to win, and it's such a big difference, and we can attest to it. Forget about the money, I mean the other things that come with it that. It's hard to explain to other people that when you haven't won.
We'll pause right here and do that a little bit. What is it about, and we'll ask Michael first, then we'll loop back to you for your answer, Paul. You say it's hard to explain. That doesn't mean I won't make you try. That's my job.
Yeah.
But Michael, what are the other accoutrements of winning this title?
Well, for me, it was never about the money. I mean, I know that's hard to explain to people, but money's not important to me anyway. I mean, I just spend it. So, I like to have it, of course. But
I get what you're saying.
To me, the Eclipse Award was very important. I mean, when you think Secretariat gets an Eclipse Award and you get one, it kind of like feels good, you know.
The emotion, we call it emotional income, emotional value. That's
the
what
other thing is that look, just I'm so competitive. Paul's just I just like to beat people in a competitive situation, and so to be called the best and beat somebody on your best days was a great life affirmation. Of what you've done, you know, for most of your life, and it was really pleasing for that to happen. Whether they're paying you $50,000 or $800,000 or whatever,
without a doubt, the affirmation, like you were saying, being called the champion, I had two state senators in New York send me things. One guy laminated. I have it hanging in my office. I'm not sure. Unfortunately, I don't remember his name right now, but. They sent me stuff. You know, this is about horse racing. This is about gambling. Things I've done my whole life that have been everybody that I've ever come across has stuck their nose up at initially when they hear that that's what I do. anything that I've been in any social circles, it's the acceptance. Nobody gets it right. And you can tell them that you've been a professional gambler for 50 years or you created this. It doesn't matter. You still get it. But when they hear that you're the NHC champion, you're the, you know, the champion, all that goes away. I mean, it's hard to explain that it's that simple, but it does.
Yeah.
Your experience, like, in your job in politics.
Well,
I mean,
I was about to say, my job in politics is like, you know, what do you do for a living? Well, I do politics, and people turn their nose up at you. Well, have you ever done a, you know, presidential or something like that? And look, I mean, I'm proud of what I do. I'm good at my craft. James Carville said you should always be proud of what you do because it's important. And it's almost like a parallel kind of endeavor,
right,
in that politics kind of thumb your nose down a little bit. But I've done well in both. But this is just such a great, like, oh, you bet on horses? What have you done? Oh, well, you know, I won the championship, you know. Yeah. Okay, well, hey, that's something, right?
Well, it usually is, it's the other way. I mean, it's the people get excited for you. You know, it's like it used to be where they would shoot you down, and now it's the opposite. You know, it's a total 180. I mean, it's hard to describe. And then just all the other things that, you know, they don't seem like much, but, you know, I was at a Keeneland contest, and Michelle was going over all the things that Ray Orsinal had to do the next year. And I yelled over to her. I said, I am so jealous. It's like I'm you left me, you know. And
that's great.
You know, and because there's just so many things. You know, I think I told Jenny Reeves the one time, you know, it's almost like you won Miss America. You know, they, you know, and you're on this. And it's respect. You know, you're not on it with a nose thumb.
It's also, you know, a bit of a responsibility.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and that you have to take on the responsibility of promoting the sport and trying to help, you know, grow the sport a little bit, which
representing
I totally
all horse players.
Embrace.
And you guys have both done a great job. Michael, you with especially in the area of horse rescue, and you, Paul, with your tireless work as a horse player advocate in things like the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge Committee. I mean, you guys did such a great job. That tournament was in trouble after the incident a couple of years ago, and you put hours and hours of what I assume is free consulting to try to fix that for horse players, all the while advocating, both of you, for the central role that we have in this game.
Yeah. Anytime I'm asked to do anything for horse players, I feel obligated to do it. And that, and like we were saying before, now that you've won, you really feel obligated to do it. I mean, before you could sneak out of it, but now,
hey,
you know.
Paul, admit it. Before you could speak out, no one would listen.
Yeah, right.
Now you speak out, and people turn a little bit of an ear, and then you know, maybe they'll turn away.
It's just the best, and whoever wins today is gonna get that feeling, you know.
We've talked about this a few times, too, and at some point, it sounds like Steve very soon is going to have Chris Littlemore on the show to give the speech that, for whatever weird reason, he wasn't able to give at the Eclipse Awards. Did you guys notice that this year? Have you heard any stories?
Well, you know, I mean, I was live tweeting the Eclipse, and I did notice, and I thought that was, I mean, I'll be honest, I really thought that was a little disrespectful, because the thing is that, you know, the origination of this tournament was to give back and recognize the horse player, and then over the course of the, you know, last 4 or 5 years, 7 years, we've kind of reduced the recognition that the horse player who supports the industry, everybody that's sitting in that room at Gulfstream Park is supported by my money, by Paul's money. If we're not there, they're not there. And I really think it was a bit disrespectful. Now, Chris may have not wanted to give a speech. I don't know whether that was...
I don't
was,
think that's the case.
Well, then...
That's really bad if
well,
that's
then
the
that,
case.
That's yeah. a little unfortunate.
I didn't know the details either.
Right, because...
They were rushing the whole thing through. They were hell-bent, you know, to truncate the thing, and which is okay. You want to tighten it up. You don't want it to be a three-hour snooze fest. Okay. It didn't have to go in 90 minutes either. There's a happy median. And apparently they brought in a showrunner, and it was... The spurs were put to it at every juncture. And I think he was a victim of that, probably.
And again, I think that's very unfortunate, because I think that the original idea for recognizing the horse player was to actually give him some him or her some time to be recognized, and we didn't get that at the Eclipse Awards this year, and I hope they are able to rectify that next year.
We'll get back, and Steve's great idea of having him on to talk to get some of his ideas out there and give him that platform, and I think we'll all try to amplify that, and maybe in a small way we can try to turn this negative into a positive.
Well, I think one of the problems is, you know, Steve Chris is not involved in the industry as much anymore, and he never would let that happen in the past because that was his, you know, like Mike was saying,
that's his idea.
That was his only involvement. He liked the fact that there would be a horse player at the Eclipse, and that's why he was involved to begin with. Yeah, and he never wanted to see that go away, and that's a little.
I think that's the famous story of Tim Smith coming to him at the very origins of this tournament, right. Ahead of the NTRA back then,
right.
and saying, you know, what can we do that's special? And that was Steve's brainchild.
Right.
Sounds like Steve is doing well, and he's playing horses a lot, but he is taking this retirement thing seriously, and nobody can blame him for that.
No.
But you are probably
right.
But
if he was involved, they would never. What happened this year, if that's what happened, would never have gone. Been allowed to happen.
Mistakes happen, and all we can do is try to rectify them from here in the best way we can, and turning negatives into positives is something we have to do a lot in this game, and this is just another instance of that. Michael, who are you playing here? Have you looked at this race at all?
I did not look at the race, and again, I think, you know, if you're on the leaderboard at this point, you're really almost not handicapping. You're, again, this is more of a game situation, right? And so you're trying to figure out, I mean, you got to handicap a little bit, but there's certain horses that you cannot take if you're behind, and there's horses that you have to take if you're ahead. I'm thinking, you know, if I'm Randy Gallo, I just don't want
the other horse
if he can catch me. If a 9-to-5 can pass me, which
it's a weird
I don't think it's possible at $10, it's possible. I can't let a favorite beat me here. So almost I'm thinking
you're
blocking
between them.
I have to. I just have to because I know the next race is going to be, you know, hopefully a chalk fest, and I can block more better with a 3-to-5 in the next race if I still have the lead. So I'm almost thinking I have to take the 7 here, regardless of really who I like. Now, there are other handicappers. Paul may be one of these that says, no, I'm going to play the horse that I like regardless. I'm going to play the statistics and say that I know the favorite, a 9-to-5, is going to win 38% of the time. That sounds good to me. You know,
it'd
so,
be hard for me to lose to the horse I like, though. I think I'd have trouble carrying that beat around.
And there are people that think like that.
Well, we know Chris Littlemore thinks that way.
Yeah.
He said so.
Yeah.
So he's, you know, he's going to take whoever he likes here. I think it's also interesting in the game theory of who you take if you're behind. You know, Duke and I were talking about what Steph Frank's going to do, being in last. You know,
he's got to.
You
worry
saw that in the last race
by Marshall.
The last five guys all took the 1.
Yeah.
So now you got a situation here where those guys in the back are all. It's a possibility they were all going to take the 8. Now, you might want to get a clever there. You know, if you're in the back. And maybe get off that. If they're equaling up a little bit right now.
I mean, if you're $16 behind and you're in, you know, fifth place, fourth or fifth.
It's pretty simple there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple horses you can't take here.
Well, the only thing that, you know, Roger Satina taught me, which I tried to use a little bit yesterday. I didn't use it to my advantage either. But he came up with the strategy of backdooring that place, which is an interesting idea on some bombs.
Right.
You know,
if you like them, and Roger loves his bombs.
Yeah, and his idea of backdooring, if you're in fourth or fifth, you can take a shot to win it all, and if you get second,
you inch up,
and you might get a big place price. You know, with something like
and
that.
And this is the perfect board for a backdoor
for something like that. Yeah, yes.
Because you have a lot of spread around on the horses at the top, and all you have to do is get one of those out,
right?
And you have a bomb, and you're going to get $14-$15.
That's
here,
I mean,
sure.
that comes into play here.
Too.
Yeah, it comes into play here for those guys like you're talking about, that are like Jim, you know, who's a great guy. I don't know if you guys know Jim Meeks.
He was on with us before.
Yeah, he's great guy.
Yeah, he's absolutely terrific. What about the folks in the firing line in behind Meeks? What do you do if you're them, Paul?
Behind him? That's what I was saying earlier. You know, which bomb do you take? Because I don't think I'd worry about that at this point.
Play whichever one of the longer prices
you like.
Well, I mean, Pete, again, it's like, are you playing to win? You know, are you playing to, like, move up and grab some more prize money? I would hope that everybody we'd be trying to play to win here and take a 12-1 or the 30-1. I mean, that's what I would be doing. But, hey, there may be some people that want to play a 3-1 and try to just pass some people up there.
Let's look through this.
Right. Steve, well, I can tell you, the Bachok family and the Matisse family would be playing to win. I mean, I wouldn't be trying to run second really quick. I mean, when 2012, when I won it, you know, I didn't even know what second place paid. And people were like, really? I said, no, I had no idea. If I really knew the difference between first and second, I may have freaked out because it was a huge difference that year between a million and, what was it?
Maybe 150 a million and 150, or,
I mean, I wasn't playing for second.
Right.
I was playing to win. Again, the money doesn't matter. It mattered. But so I'm hoping everybody's playing to win. But look, you don't have to play to win here. You can play for some money.
Well, it's interesting. With the last race, maybe the last race comes into effect there, too. People thinking, well, I don't have two chances to make the move to the front. Maybe I can move up into fourth and get that
especially if you're ninth
payday.
Especially if you're eighth or ninth here, you know, because it's a big difference from there.
I mean, Marshall Graham here is going to probably make the right decision. I don't know what it is, but I'm telling you.
Economically, he's
exactly.
not going to mess it up.
I would bet on Marshall to make the right decision here, and he's probably not playing to win. He may be thinking, look, I got to move up a little bit, and then I'll take a shot in the last race because I'm sure it'll be a big bomb. I mean, a big favorite, and I'll pick I'll be forced into playing another horse.
There's the board for the Santa Anita Nightcap.
Oh, we've got the board for Santa Anita. We've got the longest price is 6-1, 2-1, 3-2, 9-5, 6-1 at the moment with 18 minutes to race. Now.
I know my brother Duke thinks the eight's got a shot, and at a price.
The eight's got a shot at a price at Golden Gate.
It's not a.
Like I said, you got a dart?
Got a dart.
And look, I think having.
He does have a shot. He has a number like three.
Yeah, being able to see the odds for the last at Santa Anita is very important here because now you know what you're looking at.
Oh, yeah, over here. Yeah.
Exactly. So you know that you got three horses that can't get you there. Right. So that really kind of forces your hand a little bit.
But if you get the third, though,
the people behind.
You got a pretty open board. If you get yourself the third, you think you got a live shot to win it all at the end, you know.
Let me run this down then. Gallo on top, 336.60. Simonovic is $9.40 back. Perry, $12.20 back. Coles, $15 back. Meeks, $20.80 back. Baglaji, 25.40. Then Gilbert, 39 back. Littlemore, 40 back. Graham, 59 back. Drew, 67 back.
This is the contest right here, I think. I mean, you know, at least where you got to get to the top five, you know, to have some chance and to be alive going into that last race. Because, you know, not everybody's going to have a live shot going to the last race. It's not like, you know, in the past, like Frank Drew would. The idea in this next to last race was to get to a cap, you know, away so that you have a shot. This has moved up. This is your shot right here. You know, I think the guys in the back have to take the bombs.
Yeah.
The guys in the middle have to take the middle ones, you know. I mean, the guys in the middle could do the Roger Satina move and take a bomb too. But, and then the guy, like Michael said at the beginning, you know, who you take in the top here. If you're at the top, you're taking one of the favorites.
And this is like the argument of the ages for horse handicappers is, like, if you're in the lead, do you take the horse that you like or do you take the horse that is statistically gives you, the on paper, the best chance of winning?
You know, the only thing
I think
would
is the horse that gives you the best chance. I cannot be beaten by the 8-5 if I'm Randy Gallo. I have to take the 8-5.
If I was fourth, fifth, or sixth, though, because the way the board came up at Santa Anita, you could take the short just to make sure that you got the one of the three live shots, you know, in the next race. You know.
Now, one of the Matisse brothers, Duke is saying that, you know, you take the horse that you like because you let the seven beat you. And
if you have an opinion, you got to go there. But
you really think? See, I'm on the other side. But if I really like the nine, I would take the 7, 100%, if I'm Randy Gallo right here.
I can tell you that the 10 is the favorite. The 10 and the 7 are virtually dead even in the doubles and the pick 3.
Right.
Then the 9, who's 6-1, is the third choice in the doubles and the pick 3.
I think if I was in the middle, I would just be looking to have a chance in the last race. I'm one of those.
Yeah, because then then you'll take the 10.
Yeah, and see what happens. Yeah, right.
Just
that.
Because you know Randy, the top three are not. They can't take the 10.
Right.
They're going to have to take one of the other three favorites. Yeah.
Right.
It's very interesting
to have an attempt at it. Unless I love, you know. The prerequisite to all
Unless
this is.
Yes, I love the horse.
The prerequisite is if you love the horse,
you just know
your opinion.
Well,
who
was that? Was it last year or was it Ray that Ray Arsenault 2 years ago? Right, Ray took a horse late that he just liked and that didn't make sense necessarily from a strategic standpoint and won.
Well, even Chris last year.
Or was it Chris?
One of the two did. He took a horse that really didn't make sense, but he liked the horse and it won.
That's right, and that was the moment when
right, you know. But here's the thing: when you get into the gray area and you don't have a big opinion, that's when it comes.
And let's be honest, it's Golden Gate.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so who really has a strong opinion about Golden? I know I didn't when I was making my bet. So.
Right, you wanted with Golden Gate.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't have a strong opinion. I did not want to bet. I was kind of forced into that horse.
Right.
In one sense, there was a favorite I couldn't take.
Right.
And I didn't want the top figure horse that I was using Thoroughgraph to beat me because that was my main data source. And I'm like, there's no way I could live with that.
Yeah.
So, and the horse fit the odds. So if you work those three kind of things, I can't take this one. This has the best, you know, data that you like.
It becomes clear.
Yeah, it kind of comes all together.
Yeah.
Well, a quick rundown as they get behind the gate. My Sweet Lou, 8-1. Lucky and Terry's is 35-1, and actually has a race against Claimers that is not far off. Then the four, Top Notch, 40-1. The horse that I might play is the six, Desert Mist from Bill Morey.
Yeah,
4-1. Spiral Jester, the 7, 5-2.
All right, it's wide open. I want to know I've already come on. I'm on record. If I'm Gallo, I'm taking the 7. No, well, now it's the 10. The 10 is now the favorite. So I'd be like, if I had an opinion between the two, I'd take one of the two. Paul, who would you take if you're Gallo?
I don't know. I'm probably not going to take one of the two favorites.
I wouldn't.
I'm going to probably take the 9 or the 6 or the 9, which one I like better. Which I think that's when good. I looked at it was the 9.
That's right? Good to know, Paul.
Right. Yeah,
I'm filing that away.
You know, also you got.
I'm filing that away.
You got to remember place too.
Next time you and I are in next year when we're in the final table, I'm filing it away. That
I got it. I've already got it marked. What you did.
he's laying the groundwork for next year. I get it. All right.
This is a high level gamesmanship. They're getting in the gate. We've got two races to run. Golden Gate right now, the 8th, and then Santa Anita's 9th, which is really only 10 minutes away. So it'll be a fascinating postscript after this Golden Gate.
I want to look at that race. I haven't looked at it off the turf. I haven't looked at that Santa Anita race off
We've
the turf.
We've got 25-1 shot, a little bit reluctant to load. Meet Miss Kitty. And just a couple more. Macy Joe, 9-2. That was the 9 horse. Coco B, looks like she's the favorite. 2-1. And then I Love Romance, 13-1. Jonathan Wong, always dangerous. Coco B, a Richard's Kid filly. Lane Wright. And looks like she will go off favored. Desert Mist is where I would have ended up. To be honest, the Desert Code filly. These are all Cal breds. Actually, there was a Kentucky bred. That's interesting. Oh, state bred was part of the condition. It could have been a state bred to mix it up in here. That's why. But mostly, they were originally Cal breds. You had Sweetly Spoken Scratch.
That's probably why I would think
McLean's Music. Kentucky bred. Continue to wrestle now with the 1, My Sweet Lou. Abel Cedillo for Ed Mosier Jr. There we go. Matt Dinnerman with the call. The penultimate start in NHC 19.